really need health care, we need housing, we need education, we need to keep families together when it comes to the units unifying communities and individuals. When you affect a black woman, you affect the family, and you affect the family, and you affect the community. And I really feel that Harris and Biden hopefully can listen to these communities and realize this is important right now, especially during a crisis like this with COVID and economic, that they listen to this basic policies instead of sci-fi weapons, all kinds of stuff, this housing, education, family unification, and healthcare.
Messiah, we have to leave it there. What an honor to have worked with you here in your fellowship at Democracy Now!, filmmaker, host of the short documentary series Against All Odds. And thank you so much to Deanna Hoskins. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe, save lives, wear a mask.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, after 2 weeks on site, the Oregon State Police have pulled out of the federal courthouse in downtown Portland. Coronavirus vaccine trials are beginning in Oregon, and Portland may be on the verge of enacting the most stringent facial recognition ban in the country. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 14th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. Yesterday, the Oregon State Police departed the federal courthouse in downtown Portland. They took over responsibility for protecting federal property in a deal negotiated between Governor Kate Brown and federal authorities on July 30th. As they were leaving, a spokesman for the state police indirectly blamed their departure on Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt, who took office last week. According to OPB and other sources, State Police Captain Timothy Fox said, quote, "At this time, we are inclined to move those resources back to counties where prosecution of criminal conduct is still a priority." On Tuesday, the reform-minded Schmidt announced that his office would be dismissing charges against protesters who had been arrested and charged with misdemeanors or rioting. Captain Fox's statement implied that the decision to vacate the courthouse was made by the Oregon State Police, but that was quickly refuted by both the governor and Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. Governor Brown later tweeted, quote, "As has been planned for the last 2 weeks, last night was the final night for the Oregon State Police to take responsibility for keeping the peace and protecting free speech around the federal courthouse building downtown." Fox later admitted that the departure was based on the fact that the two-week commitment was completed. But it also sent a clear signal that new DA Mike Schmidt can look forward to continuing pushback from law enforcement agencies. With viral photos raising concerns among Oregonians, yesterday the United States Postal Service confirmed that it had been removing mailboxes in both Eugene and Portland. To date, 27 have been removed in Eugene and 4 in Portland. They also confirmed that they still have plans to remove a few more in Portland. According to Willamette Week, Post Office spokesperson Ernie Swanson said the service is only removing boxes where multiple boxes were placed next to each other. Swanson said, quote, "The reason we're doing it is declining mail volume. Ever since the pandemic came along, people are mailing less for some reason." He went on to say that the order came from Postal Service leadership about a week ago and speculated that the boxes are probably being removed around the country. Post Office employees expressed alarm when Luis DeJoy was named Postmaster General in May. Many felt that the Republican Party fundraiser and mega donor was put in place to undermine the post office during an election year. workplace rule changes implemented by DeJoy have resulted in slower mail deliveries, and the Portland Post Office warned residents to mail their ballots earlier than normal during the recent special election for city commissioner. Historically, residents were told to get their ballots in the mail by Friday before Election Day, but with the slowdown and disorganization resulting from DeJoy's leadership, this year the recommendation is to mail ballots by Wednesday, a full week before the election. Portland City Council is considering two ordinances that would result in the strongest ban on facial recognition technology in the country. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service.
Portland is poised to pass the strongest ban on facial recognition technology in the country next month. Nearly a year in the making, the Portland City Council is considering two ordinances. The first would ban government use of facial recognition technology, already passed in cities like San Francisco and Boston. The second would ban its use by businesses in public places, making Portland the first city to do so. Native Portlander and member of the digital rights group Fight for the Future, Leah Holland, says there's evidence some Portland businesses are using this technology.
Because facial recognition is currently totally unregulated in Portland, no one actually has to report whether or not they're using the technology to anyone whatsoever. So we don't actually know how many companies have been using this technology on people.
In the wake of George Floyd's death, Amazon, IBM, and Microsoft announced they would suspend the sale of facial recognition technology to police departments. City officials say the Portland Police Bureau doesn't use it, but some law enforcement agencies defend facial recognition as a useful tool for identifying people wanted by authorities. The technology has come under scrutiny for racial bias. According to a National Institute of Standards and Technology report from December, facial recognition was up to 100 times more likely to misidentify people of color. Holland says this is happening on the ground in Detroit.
The Detroit Police Department uses facial recognition to try and identify people who have committed crimes and have multiple times arrested black men who look nothing like the people in the videos based on what the computer says and the own inherent racism of that police department.
Supporters say facial recognition technology will become more accurate with more training. Democrats in Congress are investigating whether it has been used by federal agencies to track protesters. Holland notes the dangers extend beyond demonstrations. Fight for the Future has raised concerns about the security of the databases where this information is stored.
It exposes our data to potential hackers, stalkers, and other bad actors. Think about your credit card number. If that gets hacked, you can just change it, but you can't change your face or the face of your child.
The Portland City Council is scheduled to vote on these ordinances September 9th. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregonians will soon be taking part in two different clinical trials of potential vaccines against the virus that causes COVID-19. In Medford, Phase 3 trials of a vaccine by biotech startup Moderna are ramping up at the Clinical Research Institute of Southern Oregon. The institute is hoping to recruit as many as 700 volunteers by the end of this month to join a two-year trial. The trial is prioritizing volunteers 65 and older who are at a higher risk from the coronavirus. Once the trial starts, half the volunteers will receive two doses of vaccine, while the other half will receive two placebos. The individuals will not know whether they have received the vaccine or not. They have to keep a diary of their temperature and any symptoms they may have, and also undergo regular blood tests to check for antibodies. The trial will run for 2 years to study the long-term impact of the vaccine. In Portland, Kaiser Permanente is recruiting 100 people to take part in the trial of a vaccine developed by Pitzer and the German company BioNTech. Like in Medford, Portland volunteers will get either a vaccine or a placebo. The Moderna and Pfizer vaccines represent two of the 8 vaccines that have entered Phase 3 trials around the world. Phase 3 is the final trial before the drug can be approved for widespread public use. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is one of the nation's top infectious disease experts, has predicted that one or more of these studies could demonstrate an effective vaccine by year's end. As of this morning, the Mosier Creek fire in the Columbia Gorge has grown to 971 acres, as firefighters are struggling to contain the blaze as soaring temperatures approach for this weekend. Since the start of the fire on Wednesday, over 900 people have been evacuated from the town of Mosier and surrounding areas. 4 structures have been destroyed. The Shiloh Inn in the Dalles has been set up as a shelter location for those who were forced to evacuate due to the wildfire. The Oregon Department of Forestry says firefighters have contained about 10% of the blaze, with approximately 75% of the fire lined as of mid-morning. The Department of Forestry also said the fire is believed to be human-caused, though investigations to determine that exact cause remain underway. Though the fire's growth has been minimal over the last 24 hours, officials are concerned that weekend predictions that call for triple-digit temperatures throughout the area. The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning for all of Northwest Oregon, with temperatures expected to surpass 100 degrees both Saturday and Sunday, and warm evenings with lows of high 60s to lower 70s. There's also a red flag warning for most of northwestern Oregon and some parts of southwest Washington, as wind and relatively lower humidity make ideal conditions for wildfires to start and spread quickly. Fire crews are hoping to secure the Mosier Creek fire line to 100% by Friday evening, with structural task forces from Clackamas, Marion, Washington, Yamhill, Columbia, and Multnomah counties assisting local fire departments. The ongoing COVID-19 pandemic presents additional challenges for crews battling the blaze. Firefighters need to stay in small groups, limit unnecessary interactions, and are staying in separate living conditions. In a briefing Friday morning, Oregon State's Fire Marshal's Office Lieutenant Rich Tyler commented on the coronavirus precautions, saying, quote, "If there is exposure, it's not spread throughout the camp. We've created a bubble, if you will, between us and the community. We don't want to bring COVID to them, nor do we want to get COVID from them," end quote. The University of Oregon has agreed to cover 4 murals in one of its libraries, following years of outcry from students, staff, and community members. The murals have been criticized for their language and visual message portraying indigenous people in a racist manner. One of the murals in the Knight Library, titled "The Mission of a University," mentions the need to, quote, "conserve our racial heritage." In 2017, students petitioned to remove it. At that time, university officials did not remove it, but did conduct a series of discussions about art and cultural memory. 2 other murals depict the development of humanity similar to the growth of a tree. In the dirt, indigenous people are scrawling on cave walls and building fire, while white people are observed flowering at the apex. U of O Provost Patrick Phillips said the decision to cover the murals is directly influenced by the outpouring of nationwide protests condemning systemic racism and police brutality sparked by the police murder of George Floyd. Regarding the murals, Phillips told Oregon Live, quote, "This is a historic time in our country, and we need to listen to the members of our community who have felt the hurt and sting of racism on our campus. This is something that is long overdue." Fran Smith was a student who petitioned for the removal of the murals in 2017. She regards the murals as, quote, "degrading to students of color." Smith also believes that the nationwide Black Lives Matter protest has fueled the students' response to cover the paintings. Now a senior, she posted, quote, "Without the momentum of the Black Lives Matter movement and other racial justice movements behind it, I don't think the university would be making these sudden attempts to rectify its mistakes." The university's decision comes amidst a renewed public scrutiny of statues, monuments, and other historical artifacts that embrace prejudicial histories and depictions. The murals date back to the library's construction in 1937, and as such, they can't be removed from the walls without risking structural damage to the building, so covers will be installed by October 1st. Earlier today, the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners unanimously voted to place a measure entitled the Clackamas Children's Safety Levy on the November ballot. If passed by voters, the levy will raise nearly $8 million per year for 5 years, which will be provided to local nonprofits serving children impacted by violence, abuse, and neglect. A coalition of nearly 30 local organizations and businesses launched the Yes for Clackamas Kids campaign to drive public support for the measure. In testimony, Clackamas County District Attorney-elect John Wentworth said, quote, "If we can help curb this trauma early on, we have a better chance of keeping people out of the criminal justice system as adults. We have a better chance of keeping adults out of hospitals. We have a better chance of ensuring our citizens are productive members of society." The 5-year levy is assessed at 15 cents per $1,000 of assessed value, or about $3.78 per month on a home with an average assessed value of $30,000. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up next at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Tonight, we'll see a clear evening with an overnight low in the mid-60s. Tomorrow and Sunday, a heat advisory is in effect, with both days forecasted to hit a midday high of at least 100 degrees. On this day in 1945, World War II ended with the unconditional surrender of Japan. Today's quote is from General Dwight Eisenhower, who said, quote, "I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, as one who has seen its brutality, its futility, its stupidity." During an interview on Fox News yesterday morning, President Trump said he would hold up a coronavirus stimulus package if it included funding for the post office. KBOO's Ray Bodwell brings us this commentary.
During a call into Fox News yesterday, President Trump said that he opposes much-needed funding for the United States Postal Service because he doesn't want to see it used for mail-in voting this November. This has to qualify as one of the most flagrant public displays of planned voter disenfranchisement in American history.
They want $3.5 billion for the mail-in votes, okay, universal mail-in ballots. They want $25 billion for the post office. Now, they need that money in order to have the post office work so it can take all of these millions and millions of ballots. But if they don't get those two items, that means you can't have universal mail-in voting.
Trump has been attacking the post office for years, but has ramped it up recently. On April 24th, he made these comments.
The Postal Service is a joke because they're handing out packages for Amazon and other internet companies, and every time they bring a package, they lose money on it.
Like most Republicans, the president conveniently overlooks the fact that the post office was profitable until 2006, when the Bush administration signed into law a requirement that the service had to pay in advance for retiree benefit costs for the next 75 years, a requirement that has never been placed on any other government entity. He next ramped up his efforts to destroy the post office on May 6th, when he appointed businessman and Republican Party megadonor Louis DeJoy as the Postmaster General. Not only does DeJoy have no experience with the post office, he and his wife are major stockholders in United Parcel Service and the trucking company J.B. Hunt, both of whom are in direct competition with the service DeJoy is supposed to lead. DeJoy immediately implemented cost-cutting measures that resulted in a noticeable slowdown in deliveries and a huge backlog of unsorted mail in post offices around the country. I've seen this firsthand. It recently took 10 days for a postcard I mailed from Portland to reach Pennsylvania. Perhaps not surprisingly, Trump's concerns with vote by mail are primarily focused on states with Democratic governors. He's fine with Republican-controlled Florida, infamous for the hanging chads that resulted in George Bush coming to power in 2000.
So Florida's got a great Republican governor, and it had a great Republican governor. It's got Ron DeSantis, Rick Scott, two great governors. Florida has been working on this for years, and they have a very good system of mail-in.
Before we get into the election implications, let's take a quick step back and view the U.S. Post Office in context. It was initially proposed in 1775 and has been a government service since 1792. There are over 630,000 full and part-time employees. It is the world's single largest mail delivery system and delivers nearly 50% of all the mail in the world. And the post office is legally obligated to deliver your mail regardless of your location. Now let's dial in vote by mail. In addition to Oregon, Hawaii, Colorado, Washington, and reliably Republican Utah all do it. States that vote by mail generally see higher voter participation. In the 2018 midterm elections, Oregon's turnout was 14% higher than the national average. and numerous cabinet and senior members of the Trump administration have voted by mail or cast absentee ballots, including Attorney General Barr, Vice President Pence, Cabinet members Betsy DeVos, Alex Azar, and Wilbur Ross, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway, and members of the President's family, including Melania and Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, and the President himself. Trump's efforts to destroy the post office to boost his reelection chances will not surprise us, but it should horrify us. And if his destruction of the post office enables his reelection, it could signal the end of American democracy, flawed though it may be. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
A government watchdog group has determined that the two highest-ranking officials in the Department of Homeland Security are not legally qualified to hold their jobs. The Government Accountability Office said that Acting Secretary Chad Wolf and Acting Deputy Secretary Ken Cuccinelli assumed their jobs under an order of succession created by their predecessor, Acting Secretary Kevin McAleenan. But the office said that McAleenan had not been identified in the official succession list and that his name of Wolf and Cuccinelli was invalid. The Accountability Office also reported that McAleenan had changed the succession list, naming Wolf to succeed him, but that he had no authority to do so. The Accountability Office report has no force of law, but the agency said that they are forwarding their conclusions to the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General. ACLU lawyers said it would solidify their claims that the DHS has illegally imposed restrictions on asylum seekers, and lawyers for Portland protesters said it would aid in their lawsuit over deployment of DHS agents in response to demonstrations at the city's federal courthouse. In May, a federal judge ruled that Cuccinelli had also been unlawfully appointed to his previous DHS position as head of the Citizenship and Immigration Services Division. The first case of COVID-19 has restricted travel to a Southeast Alaska island community. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Cakes city government this week announced travel to and from the Southeast Alaska island community is being restricted until further notice, following the village's first confirmed COVID-19 case. Residents lined up for testing after a woman in her 60s was medevaced out of the community. Swabs are being sent to Sitka with results expected back within 48 hours. Joel Jackson, president of the organized village of Cake, says the community is close-knit, where everyone shops at the same store and fuels up at the same gas station.
It can spread rather quickly, and we're hoping that it hasn't. You know, it was good news to hear that her immediate family tested negative. So we're hoping we don't come back with a bunch of positives.
City, tribal, and other public offices are closed. Alaska Seaplanes confirmed it suspended passenger flights into the community Tuesday following a request from the mayor. Travel to and from Cake is limited to police and emergency responders, state child welfare case workers, critical infrastructure technicians, and people with medical reasons. It's unclear whether authorities in Cake can enforce the travel ban. In May, the state revised a health mandate that communities connected by the Alaska Marine Highway System cannot impose their own travel restrictions. City officials in Cake did not respond to questions seeking clarification on the travel order. This week, the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes completed the largest ever intertribal transfer of bison. Savannah Marr reports with support from the Solutions Journalism Network.
The 40 buffalo were rounded up into semi-trailers in Wolf Point, Montana. They're headed to new homes with 16 different tribes as far away as the Oneida Nation in Wisconsin and the Aleutic tribe of Old Harbor in Alaska. Irvin Carlson is president of the Intertribal Buffalo Council, which facilitated the transfer. He says the animals were part of a surplus population at Yellowstone National Park and would otherwise have been slaughtered.
So today, you know, is real gratifying just to be able to get some animals out of there and then out to tribes.
The buffalo spent a year in quarantine on the Fort Peck Reservation to ensure they're disease-free. Johnny Bear Cub Stiffarm heads up the tribe's buffalo program. She says this transfer was a long time coming.
We have a drum group out here, and they'll sing the prayer songs. They'll sing the songs to send the buffalo safely to their new homes, that they travel safe and receive blessings, and say goodbye to them for us, and we'll send them on their way.
For National Native News, I'm Savannah Marr.
The New Mexico Indian Affairs Department, health agencies, and tribes have created a COVID-19 coloring book. The coloring book features artwork from Native cartoonist Ricardo Cate. He uses humor to address serious topics in tribal communities. Tribes are being hit hard by COVID-19 in the state. The coloring book is intended to raise awareness about COVID-19 by using culturally relevant messaging. The Cherokee Nation has established a commission following the historic Supreme Court McGirt ruling. The commission will make funding and resource recommendations and review other related issues to the court decision as the Cherokee Nation examines criminal jurisdiction. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. says the commission was created to protect tribal sovereignty. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The president's efforts to curtail mail-in voting has brought about a strong response. With that story and more, we go to Lily Bulkey with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
We should be very concerned that the president is trying to force Americans to risk their health to cast a ballot and undermining our elections and the very strategies we have to make sure that Americans are safe.
That's Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. Yesterday, President Donald Trump tried to walk back what he told Fox News earlier, that he opposes additional funding for the U.S. Postal Service, partly to prevent expanded vote-by-mail. Griswold, whose state has been using vote-by-mail for years, called the president's position, quote, reprehensible, when other states are trying to avoid unsafe voting conditions during a pandemic.
The alternative to that is the Colorado election model of sending a mail ballot. So the president then attacks mail ballots with lies. Then he attacks the post office, which is a key partner in having an accessible democracy. The alternative to a post office is drop boxes. And the RNC is filing lawsuits against drop boxes.
This week, 175 House Democrats sent a letter demanding Trump's new postmaster general reverses recent changes in top staff and operations that postal workers warn will slow down the delivery of mail-in ballots. While generally attacking vote-by-mail, Trump has said he supports it in Florida.
He and his campaign maybe realized that a lot of Republican voters in Florida like vote-by-mail. You know, it's quite popular there, and he's really doing himself and, you know, other Republicans a disservice by discouraging his supporters from voting absentee or voting by mail.
Jonathan Diaz from the Campaign Legal Center says it's, quote, false conventional wisdom, unquote, that mail-in voting helps Democrats more than Republicans. The data indicate just the opposite.
The voters who rely most heavily on vote by mail are those in rural areas and older voters who often lean Republican, especially during the pandemic when older voters are at particularly high risk.
In Puerto Rico, some voters go back to the polls this Sunday to salvage last weekend's botched primary for governor. Only a few vote centers had even received paper ballots by early afternoon. The Puerto Rico Supreme Court ruled that polling will resume again this weekend in the locations that either never opened or were open less than the required 8 hours. Some blame the election commissioner and others the ballot vendors. Whatever the cause, University of Florida Professor Carlos Suarez says it's part of an ongoing problem.
The big picture here is that it compromises how elections are run, the legitimacy behind them, the institutions behind them. And the big picture here is that we have seen slowly but surely electoral participation on the island diminishing.
On the mainland, Alaska, Florida, and Wyoming are preparing for their state primaries next week, the same week as the mostly virtual Democratic National Convention. And Facebook launched a new voting hub yesterday to make each state's registration and mail-in ballot request and submission deadlines easy to find. Information on Puerto Rico voting does not appear to be included. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bulkey. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 14th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Ray Bodwell, and Althea Billings. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our listeners. If you'd like to support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.